From the Land de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 6th day of October, 2021. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Here the way the numbers finished in Chicago for the day. December corn down 5.25 cents. It settled at $5.32 and a quarter. The March there at 5.41 was a nickel lower on the day. In May down 4.5 at 5.46 and a quarter. November beans 12.42 down 8.5. January 8.5 lower at 12.52 and a half. And bean meal futures up $1.50. Bean oil down 80 cents. Soft red winter wheat, a penny and a quarter higher at $7.46 for the day. Live cattle futures at 128, 22 and a half, 37 and a half higher. Feeders at 158, 12 and a half, $1.12, or rather 25 higher for the day. And lean hogs down 82 and a half cents at $81.72. That for 100 pounds. Jackie Vakes from Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri, now joins us to discuss the marketplace. Hey, thank you, Jackie, for being with us today.
You're welcome, Todd.
Tell me about support and resistance levels this week.
You bet. We did see some changes this week, Todd, in the corn and the beans both. Corn support actually went higher, December 527, resistance 589, March 509 and 569, and May 505 and 569. On beans, we actually went down. Support on November 1197, resistance 1305. January 1178, resistance 1293. March 1229, resistance at 1271. On December gold, we actually made a change there too for a change. 1762 is now support, 1910 is resistance. Dow Jones continues to trade between 31,661 and 35,091. And U.S. dollar, 93.87 support, 95.6 resistance. Bitcoin, big change there, 44,414 support, 59,120 resistance. So it took a really, really big jump.
What's the managed money look like for the week?
Well, some interesting things going on in managed money. When you look at soft red wheat, they're long 7,000 compared to 10,000 last week. But on corn, they're 256,000 compared to 239,000 last week. Beans are 70,000 versus 50,000 last week. Soy meal, short 21,000, exactly the same as they were last week. Soy oil, long 61,000, and they were only 44,000 long last week. So you can see that the managed money has made a few changes and continues to support the market.
And what do exports look like? Are they continuing to support the market?
Well, I wish I could say that. They have improved some. Wheat exports are running 13 behind compared to 14 last week. We need to average about 16.5 million bushels a week to make the USDA number. Corn, 45% behind compared to 51 last week, but we do need to average 48 million bushels. And soybeans, 74% behind compared to 81 last week, and we need to average 41.1. So the takeaway from this, Todd, would be that, we're starting to move grain again. You know, and we're hearing that the power's on in a lot of places, and there are a lot of places that are finally picking up and going. So hopefully that'll help us.
So the question then remains, why does the market feel like it's struggling? And I suppose it could be harvest, but I'm wondering if that's really the case.
Well, I think that's part of it, but basis still remains better than normal. So, it tells me that they still have a desire for it. Although, we are showing some signs of weakening as the supplies are getting into the elevator. In farmer selling, I think today what happened, Todd, was, we had a nice bounce up, and corn has had really a nice little run here. We got to that 540 plus area in December, and I think we had some of our old crop corn come in. I think we just had some guys that said, oh, time to get rid of it. Corn B ratio is only at, or the bean corn ratio is at 2.33, and that has really dropped since grain stocks. I mean, we were running pretty close to 2.5 for a long, long time, and so that would either say that corn is overpriced or beans are underpriced. And going back to quarterly grain stocks, we came in at 1.236 billion on corn, and they had made an adjustment of 71 million less bushels. Beans came in at 256. There they added 80.8 million bushels based on the fact that they found more acreage. And wheat came in at 1.78. And that was actually below what the average guesses were for it. So the farmer's still holding 32% of the old corn, Todd, 26.5% of the beans, 23.5% of the wheat. At the moment, new crop is filling the gap, but there's going to come a point in time when the need for that corn has got is the need for all of those grains is going to be in the marketplace. It's just what's it going to take to get it out of farmer hands, especially as we get closer to the holidays. China, of course, always looms in our background. You know, that's the big word. They're importing corn right now from the Ukraine, and that has put some pressure onto corn. And I think some of the biggest pressure came because the USDA Chinese attaché said that corn imports were going to be down about 240 million bushels, lower than what the current numbers are that we're estimating. So the report for the USDA was scheduled to be Monday, but it's actually going to be pushed to Tuesday because the government has a holiday on Monday for Columbus Day.
Mm-hmm.
So we know the USDA is going to adjust carryouts at least by what the grain stocks report numbers were. But the question that is probably going to be on most people's minds, certainly on my mind, is will they lower exports because of the delays due to Ida? Looking toward next year, fertilizer prices are like nuts. Down in Brazil, they said the farmers who are working with Rabobank right now are going to be putting out significantly less fertilizer, less P and K. You can do that because you can get away with it for a while. But I what I'm saying to our guys right now is, boy, you better check your anhydrous, and find out where that's at, because natural gas prices are just through the moon. And is that going to affect corn planting for next year in acres? Will that push us to more bean acres? We talked to some guys who had part of their needs booked, and now they're being told that they can't book the rest because the supplier can't get it. And so these are all things that we get to really be on top of. I think another thing that's causing some stress in the marketplace is all the inflation talk. You know, that's just always something that's sitting in the background and just weighing. So, to be honest with you, I think the market is performing very well considering all the things that are going on, and especially during harvest.
What do we know about Argentina this time around?
Well, Argentina is, their ag minister said they've sold 72% of their beans for this next year compared to 67% last year. But they haven't put a bean in the ground at all. In fact, it'll probably only be about 5% by the end of October, because the first soybeans they're going to plant, of course, is where corn planting is more advanced. And so the last beans are going to be planted will be double crop beans. And that's after the winter wheat's harvested. So soybean planting in Argentina usually gets to be about 90% complete during that first week of January. So Argentinian first crop corn is at 16.8% planted right now. So it's what that says to me is that the bean planting is going to continue to be very slow. In Brazil, we've got soy planted at 4% versus 2% on average, according to Ag Rural. And I thought this was interesting. Mato Grosso, the farmers in Mato Grosso have planted 6.1% of their soybeans compared to 1.7% last year and 3.3% average. So they are really hammering. First crop corn, 33% right now compared to 31% last year. And, I was just talking about fertilizer costs. Cost of producing beans for 21-22 in Mato Grosso is equal to 27.7 bushels per acre right now. That's pretty scary. Now you don't know, that's their input cost. Now you don't know where they got their money from, because they can't use grain as collateral. So a lot of times, they'll barter is what they'll do. And they'll say, well, you can have this many bushels of beans for this many inputs. And it's a very scary situation for them down there all the way around.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a great one.
Oh, you too. That's Jackie Vick. She's with Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri. Let's talk with Ed Ossett now from University of Minnesota Extension. He's an agricultural economist there and has some thoughts he wants to discuss as it's related to post-harvest marketing. So you've got the crop, it's already in the bin or wherever you're going to store it, I suppose, and now you have to think about what to do. Many producers, I suspect, will just want to shut the bin door, certainly through January. What concerns and thoughts do you have?
Well, I have all sorts of concerns about that. I'll tell you, I tell producers every year that the three most important words you must repeat to yourself as you look ahead to your marketing ideas in the year ahead, the three most important words to tell yourself are forget last year. And I got a feeling that the people putting unpriced grain in the bin are thinking about last year when they sold too early and too cheap. We all did. Everyone did. And missed the highs. And so this year we're going to fix, we're not going to do what we did last year because we don't want to get caught again. But I'm, Todd, I look at this market and I could make a bull argument here and I could make a hell of a bear argument too, depending on where things go. Of course, we're in the middle of harvest right now. Yeah, we'll find out in the next month. Was the crop bigger than expected, maybe somewhat smaller than expected? But the big question out there, I think, is the demand side. We had tremendous exports to China in the last year, soybeans and corn, particularly corn. And I think there's just sort of this sense that, well, that's going to happen again. And I'm not 100% sure about that. I think the soybean exports are going to be good. Corn exports could go either way. So here's what I'm looking at. I'm looking at an incredible basis level nearby. In my neck of the woods, southern Minnesota, corn basis levels and soybean basis levels are the best we've seen in the last 30 years. So, a good basis is asking you to, give me some grain, okay? And if you're putting it in the bin, you're fighting that. And you're expecting basis to get even better? I don't know about that. It's very, very good right now. I'm looking at carries. We talked about this last time we got together. The November, July carry in the soybean market, that was a 65-cent inverse in May. That's a very bullish signal. Today, it went from a 65-cent inverse to a 35-cent carry as we're talking right now. That's not the sign of a bull market. That carry going from a 65-cent inverse to a 35, that's a dollar move in the spread. That bothers me. So, what I'm thinking, I'm not going to tell people they're just wrong to put unpriced grain in the bin. I could be desperately wrong, and we have a repeat of last year. We have the great demand. But boy, spread it out, okay? Get something sold at harvest. Don't put all your eggs in either basket. Spread out the risk.
I don't know whether there's anything else to ask you because that's pretty straightforward and easy to understand.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at. I'll tell you what else I'm looking at. A person, if you do, bite and say, well, maybe that basis is good and I shouldn't get so proud and I'll sell out, half my crop here, right here at harvest. People feel like they're out of the market. Look ahead to 2022. The December 22 contract, as much movement as we've watched over the last 4 to 5, 6 months in these grain markets, December 22 corn, I believe yesterday was trading at 534, life of contract high. It hasn't given up. In fact, it's improved a little bit. Now, is 535 corn going to be the high? I doubt it very much. I don't know where it's going, but that's a profitable price for next year's corn crop for anyone listening. And I'm also looking at soybeans November 22 at 1235. That is not life of contract high. It's probably 70 cents off life of contract high, but it too is a profitable price. You don't have to go crazy, but dip your toes in, right?
Would you dip your toes in using a basis contract?
If they can lock in a really good basis for New Year delivery, yeah, give it a shot. You're taking a risk. Basis contracts are funny. You're locking in the smallest part of the cash price, you know, the futures price. You know, if it takes a 50 cent dip, you might not feel that good about locking in that extra 10 cents on the basis. So
yes, you're riding the 50 cents down. At least it's not as wide as it might be.
But if you're, if you're, you know, you think there's a bounce in the game, if you think there's a bounce in the weeks ahead on futures, you know, coming off a harvest low, it's not a bad idea. But again, I just emphasize, I don't want all my eggs in any one basket here. Spread it out.
I look forward to talking with you in another month.
Okay. We'll see how much I have, if I have to eat my words or not. We'll see.
Thank you, Ed.
Okay. Take care.
You too. That's Ed Ossett. He is an agricultural economist at the University of Minnesota Extension. On this Wednesday, let's check with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City to see what might be up with the forecast here in the United States to begin with. Hi, Drew. Thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, it's another one of those nice days. It's autumn, and we do have a lot of cloud cover around, but the temperature's good, and that's all that matters, right?
Yeah, that is all that matters. Well, as long as you can keep running in the field, depending on whether you wanted to continue to run. Although I do want to look ahead to next week. We've been hearing about this system throughout the week that may or may not show up in the northwestern part of the Corn Belt, some of the plain states up there. Can you tell me what you're thinking?
Yeah, there's two storms. The first one comes through as early as Thursday night into Sunday morning. That's going to be the weaker of the two, but it helps to bring a little bit of moisture into the Dakotas, Minnesota, and maybe the southeast corner of Canada's prairies. And it kind of gets the atmosphere in a good mode to enhance the rainfall potential with the next storm system. That next one is going to be a very dynamic storm. It is going to have a lot of cold air behind it in the western part of the continent. All this heat we're seeing across the middle of the country and off to the east through the Midwest and into the eastern part of Canada is still going to be in place next week, although it won't be in the plains like it is now. The contrast in the air temperatures is one part of the necessary ingredients for developing a big storm. The other thing is opening up the Gulf of Mexico as a moisture source, and that takes place as a deep low-pressure center evolves potentially on Tuesday of next week. All that moisture coming north out of the Gulf with the cold air behind the system and warm air in front of it is a perfect setup for a significant storm system to evolve. And it's that time of the year. The reason why I think this is so important, though, is because even though we're done with the growing season in most of this region, we need moisture in the ground so badly. Montana and the western Dakotas, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, these areas have been just bone dry for way too long. And if we wait any longer and we bring frost into the ground, any significant precipitation will not be able to soak into the soil and be there for the farmers in the spring if we have a dry winter. And so this event is just critically important, in my opinion, because it will have the potential to bring widespread moisture, not a drought buster necessarily, but just some moisture in the ground so that when we get to spring, if it's been drier biased over the winter, there's going to be a little bit of moisture there to help support planting and early season crop development next year. Now, this storm system is still a week away, and so we have to be real careful that we don't buy into everything that's in the forecast model data. But I would certainly recommend watching this pretty closely as we go forward through the weekend.
Two things, but first let's start with the winter months. Are you telegraphing the idea that this might be a drier winter season, at least for that part of the growing area in the United States?
I actually believe that October and November are our only months of hope for putting moisture back into some of these drought-stricken areas. Just like this storm system coming up next week, we should be able to have enough contrast in the air mass temperatures and moisture sources to generate some significant moisture. Once La Nina kicks in, which is probably going to happen by the end of this month or early in November, We will go to a northwest flow pattern in North America, and that will shut off all the potential for precipitation of significance for Canada's prairies and across the northern plains and the western Corn Belt. And so I think if we don't get the moisture in these next few weeks, we probably won't have the moisture until sometime later in the spring season. So that's one of the reasons why I am concerned about that.
You talked about the cold air that's pushing this along. Does that come with this? And does it mean it's snow rather than rain, potentially?
You know, there is potential for some snow to occur. It's not all that unusual for October in the parts of Montana, for instance, or even the western or southwestern parts of the Canada Prairies. So I do think there is potential for snow on the backside of this event. As far as being able to generate a lot of cold and changing the whole North American scenarios away from the heat and into a cold scenario, I don't think we'll be able to do that with this single event. Again, I think we have to wait on La Nina to set up that northwest flow pattern. And so what will end up happening is we'll have a quick shot of cold air in the plains in the western United States, and it'll spread eastward but quickly modify in all of this heat that we have across the country. And we'll go back into a normalish to slightly warmer than normal mode for probably the next week to 10 days after next week. So I don't think we're going to go into any big cold mode right away. But maybe sometime in November and definitely December and January we'll get some pretty nippy weather.
Eastern two-thirds of the Corn Belt are a little different than that next week?
Yeah, the eastern part of the Corn Belt is seeing scattered showers fairly often, or will be doing so here shortly with a disturbance coming northward out of the southeastern states. So over the next few days, we will see scattered showers. And these two storms that I mentioned for the northern plains and the upper Midwest will spread some shower activity through the rest of the Midwest. But the bulk of the really meaningful moisture is going to be in that north-central part of the country. So we'll have showers in the eastern Midwest, but probably not a shutdown on our field work there.
Anything from South America that we need to watch?
You know, it's rained fairly significantly this week from parts of Paraguay and northern Rio Grande do Sul into portions of Paraná and southernmost Minas Gerais. That's a pretty important corn and soybean production region. And we're taking a little bit of a break right now, but we have two more waves of significant rain coming up over the next 10 days. And what's going to happen is that ground is going to be too wet for field work. Instead of worrying about droughty conditions, we're going to be worried about excess moisture. What's really interesting about this particular area that I've described is it's the area that La Nina tends to favor for dryness later in the summer season. So it may be one of those situations where we're too wet for some field work for a while here in the planting season, and then we get a little too dry when we get into the heart of the growing season. I'd be most worried about Rio Grande do Sul, Paraná, and Paraguay, as well as Santa Catarina, for the summer. So we'll see what happens, but I think we're going to be talking about rain delays rather than dryness issues.
Thank you, Drew.
Have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.